Blog Talk Radio.
M-A-D-D-A-D-S. Men against destruction, cause you know that we are blessed. Fathers of the ghetto ain't expressing nothing less. From the north to the south, to the east, to the west. Man, that's how you feel. On the streets, we keep it real. Day and night, the struggle fight is serious. I'm so for real. Tell me what was I doing. All I seen was black and blue. Soldiers showing love.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to Blog Talk with Minneapolis Mad Dads. Hope you're all doing well today. We will be discussing gun violence today, and we have a special guest with us. Heather, is that you on the line?
Yes, that's me. Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Hi. Thank you for being on with us. And you're from Protect Minnesota, correct?
That's right. Protect Minnesota is the Minnesota state organization that's dedicated to ending gun violence. We have membership statewide, and we are dedicated to changing the conversation around gun violence, making sure that we talk about racial justice in the context of gun violence, and that we do all we can to give everyone the right to a safe community.
So does that mean that you guys are against people owning guns, period, or is it just against the illegal guns?
We are, what we recognize is that gun ownership is here to stay in this country, and that gun ownership can exist safely alongside effective gun violence prevention measures. So we advocate keeping guns out of the wrong hands. We advocate getting guns off the streets, the illegal guns that are currently flooding our streets. That's very important to us. And we also do education about things like safe storage of guns for people who do own them. And we believe that we can create a world where we can be safe in our own communities and where we can take, you know, reasonable, careful measures to keep our kids safe at school and in the park and on the street, and that we can live in a safer community overall for everyone.
That makes sense. What can we do in order to help you guys do what you do? That's kind of my question. Like, how do we help you guys get these guns off the streets that don't belong in those people's hands?
Well, there are a lot of, I guess one of the things that we help people to understand, and we invite you actually to sign up on our website, which is www.protectmn.org. You can sign up there to receive an update. You get email updates, and you can also join us on Facebook. We are holding a series of trainings right now where you can learn about what are the reasons why we have the gun violence epidemic that we have today. And there are a number of reasons. One is, we have a problem with our laws. You know, if right now you can drive down the street in any city in Minnesota, park on the side of the street, open the trunk, and sell guns out of the trunk. And there's nothing illegal about that right now.
What?
And that is a private sale. You know, it's unregulated. There's no requirement that somebody doing that do what a legitimate dealer has to do, which is to make sure there's a background check on the buyer. So because we have these big gaping holes in our laws, that's one of the reasons. That's one of the sources of the problem. And we know that it works to take reasonable measures, like make sure that the person who is buying a gun is not prohibited from owning one because of whatever they may have done in the past. We're coming up on the 20th year that we've had the Brady background check law, which said not only can people convicted of these various violent crimes not get a gun, they're not allowed to have a gun, but we're also just going to check and make sure. And so about 2 million purchases of guns from dealers have been stopped that way. So that means someone who has a past of domestic violence or someone who has a serious mental illness, who's not supposed to have a gun, has a harder time, a much harder time at it when they go to a licensed dealer. And that's an incredibly important piece of legislation that took a long time to get on the books. And I know you were aware there was discussion last year about policy trying to make that apply also to those so-called private sales, like I was just talking about, the one where, you know, somebody, you know, can sell their gun wherever. And so that's a really important piece, you know, policy. But then you want to look at the bigger picture, too. Who is benefiting from the fact that we've got all these illegal guns on our streets? Well, there are a number of organizations that benefit. One is the firearms industry, which is interested in profits and is, you know, does not have any particular interest in the safety of the community so much as an interest in making a profit and continuing to exist. And we know that over time, firearms industry was doing quite well when hunting was more popular. But now that hunting is declining as a sport, they are now looking to other markets. So they're marketing to, you know, now they're talking about everything is for self-defense. You know, that's what firearms are for. Not really, you know, hunting, sure, but, you know, self-defense is the real reason. And so that's a new marketing effort that has been cultivated for quite a while. And we're finding that our kids find that very attractive. You know, if a child is not feeling safe on the street and somebody says, here, buy this and you'll be safe, that's really attractive to some kids. And what we're seeing is that there's that sort of glorification of a gun as making it powerful or safe, and that is also a means of driving sales. So there are people making money off of the lack of safety in our communities. And so that's another source of the problem. And so we look at that and we say, okay, let's find ways to hold those people accountable. And we find, and feel free to stop me and ask questions, but we find also that there are organizations like ALEC, which stands for the American Legislative Exchange Council. It sounds very, you know, sounds very benign, but it's a group of organizations, including the corrections industry and the firearms industry and the gun lobby, among others, that are interested in making sure that they affect policy in a way that benefits their ability to make a profit. So, you know, things that benefit the corrections industry are things like mass incarceration of people for drug crimes. What benefits the firearms industry is more... Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Ask your question.
Okay. I was... With you talking about all the profits and stuff, that kind of reminded me of... just the other day on the radio, I had heard... a gentleman speaking, and they said, you know, he's a whistleblower and whatnot, but the government has been letting guns walk from Mexico into the U.S.
And that really didn't
make any sense to me, but he still has his job at the ATF. They transferred him to another location, but he said that the government told him to just let these criminals keep their guns and move them on into the U.S. Why would the government want something like that?
Well, and I've heard about that case, and I think we're talking about the same one. What we had at the ATF is the government agency that is responsible for trying to get, you know, stop the gun trafficking and get the guns off the streets. And the gun, the firearms industry has fought for a long time to make the ATF as ineffective as possible. So for about almost seven years, there was nobody in charge of the ATF. And when there was some, you know, acting person and then they're gone and no continuity, no leadership, and what happens when you have a situation like that is that people start just doing their own thing. And, you know, we've been yelling about that for a number of years, saying we need a permanent head of that. We need somebody to lead that. despite, you know, it, yes, it'll cut into gun industry profits to have a real ATF, but that's what we need for our public. Otherwise, stuff like that happens, like you're describing. You get these rogue agents doing dishonest things, and there's no accountability. So we did, and we fought for getting a Minnesotan, actually, to be in charge of the ATF. That's Todd Jones, and he just finally got confirmed this year. So, and that's because people like you and me called their congressmen and they called their senators and said, wait a minute, you need to put public safety first, not the interests of the firearms industry. And so finally, there's a result. So so we're glad about that. And it's going to be because the ATF is also very understaffed, it's going to be, it is hard for them, at any rate, to try to interrupt the gun industry, gun trafficking. But we know that we can try to help do more at the local level and to make it easier for there to be an actual law. Like if somebody parks their car and starts selling guns out of the trunk, somebody can say, excuse me, come with me, please. What are you doing? And you have to be able to have a law to enforce one. And that's part of what this is all about. So, and the other part to think about is there's been a lot of use about people's cultural conditioning or sort of ingrained racism in how some of these policies are sold. And I'll give you an example. The firearms industry, and as part of ALEC, the nationwide organization, took this bill called Stand Your Ground. Which, are you familiar with that bill, that law?
I heard about that when they were talking about the Trayvon Martin case.
Yeah. It was something that the firearms industry, the gun lobby, came up with. And they took it around the whole country as part of ALEC, that umbrella group that wants to, you know, to guard profits and increase business or corrections industry and such. And what they did was they used people's ingrained racial fears and painted this picture of, you know, some criminal, and we all know what that means, right, is going to come into your house. And they're going to harm your family, and you won't be able to do anything about it unless we pass this Stand Your Ground law. The truth of the matter was, in Minnesota, people can already, if somebody breaks into their house, it's already illegal to fire a gun at them because they're committing a felony by breaking into somebody's house. But what this would do is it would create a whole zone in the public where wherever you are, it's as if everything is a deadly threat. So if you feel threatened by, and you know who, then you can shoot them because you feel threatened. And for us, for you and me, we're saying, wait a minute, just because you feel threatened by somebody, that's not a reason to murder them. That's not how a civilized society works. We have to have, you need to be accountable if you're going to harm
people.
And
absolutely.
But what they did was they pretty much played on people's fears and racial attitudes and said, you know, we need to pass this law. And then you see what happens. This case in Florida, you know, there's a man who feels threatened by lots of things, and he can then be justified and feel empowered by this law that says you can stand your ground and shoot anybody who's threatening, to then take someone's life. To take the life of an innocent teenager was okay under this bill. And so it's the way they are moving this country is something that is very threatening to our ability to live safely in our own communities. So that's why it's really important for all of us to understand, you know, where is this coming from? Who is responsible for pushing this? And how do we
push
back?
Well, and with that bill, you know, anybody can just run around with a gun and say, oh, I just felt threatened. I decided to pop him.
Right.
Is not how we solve problems. I mean, I'll be 30 next year. And when I was growing up, I admit I was a little sheltered, but when people had problems, they put their fists up. They fought,
right.
You know, they battled with their hands. They didn't pull out knives and guns and, you know, all this
right.
ammo and stuff. Nowadays, you say the wrong person or the wrong thing to the wrong person, and their gun is out. And
right.
it's like,
right.
you know, why are 12-year-olds running around with guns? It should not be easy for a 12-year-old to get a gun. It doesn't
right.
make any
right.
sense to me.
Yep, that's exactly what...
Our country should run on common sense.
That's right. And I think, you know, when you come to a training at Protect Minnesota, then that helps you to understand, okay, what are the forces that are pushing against common sense right now in this country?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we build our community power to push back against that? How can we take back our communities and say, no, it's not okay for a 12-year-old to have easy access to a gun, you know? We need to change the environment that we're in. We need to change those laws. And we need to push back and say, you know, guns are not going to keep you safe, because we know they don't. If they did, you know, our country would be the safest one on earth. But in fact, we have about 20 times the rate of gun homicide that other industrialized nations have. Disproportionate, totally disproportionate to other countries. And so we have a problem that we need
we
to
do.
We
have a serious problem. And I mean, personally, I have mixed feelings about owning guns, because I don't like them. I don't like handguns, but I have no problem with somebody having one locked up in their home for protection. But it doesn't make any sense to me that, you know, people are like, guns don't kill people, people kill people. And that's true, you know, because, you know, your pencil doesn't make a mistake, you make the mistake in your writing, you know. And
right.
it's just, so many
yep.
people say that, you know, the actual gun itself is a problem, but I think we need to start educating our children, too, on the fact that,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you've got an issue, killing someone
mm-hmm.
is permanent.
That's
killing
right.
somebody
yeah.
is, you know, that they don't come back from that. That's not something,
right.
you know, if you've got a dispute, you don't come at somebody with a gun. You come at them with your words, you know. If it really comes down to it, I'm not saying fighting is okay. I'm completely nonviolent myself. But, you know, if you feel
mm-hmm.
like you need to get in a fight, but don't shoot that person, because you're taking
yeah.
them away from somebody.
That's right. And part of it is developmental, too. When you're a kid, when you're 10, and you see, you know, violence in the media, or especially violence in your environment, if you have been a victim of violence, or if you've witnessed violence yourself, you are much more likely to engage in a violent behavior later on. So, yes, it's important to teach that and model the nonviolent resolution of problems. And so one of the things that we do have is we've run a youth program on conflict resolution over the years, which helps to teach young people ideas about some of the skills you can use to interrupt or to de-escalate a conflict. And that's important. And at the same time, though, when you're too young, or even into your, you know, early teens, your brain is not fully developed, and you are not as able as a person in their 20s to control impulses or to gauge how dangerous something actually is. So when you put when it is easily, when you have easy access to a firearm at that age, it is just more likely that you're going to do something that ends up with someone dead. It's the access to a firearm is really a critical factor in that. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important to work both at the policy level and educating our kids. So yes, you're right. I mean, I grew up with guns in my house. I learned how to shoot a gun when I was 10 years old. And it's something, like I said, you can have it in your home if you keep it locked up. And and I personally, I don't believe that, I think the data bears this out, that having a gun in your home actually is not an important factor in the prevention of violence or protecting someone as much as it is in accidental deaths or suicides or assault on a family member. So oftentimes a firearm at home is billed as something that keeps people safe, but when you look at how things actually play out in real life, having a gun in the home means more access to a gun when someone's feeling suicidal or when someone is upset and they assault another person. So it ends up actually detracting from the safety of the household. As strange as that may seem, and
so you're better off with a bat on your bed than your gun.
That's right. Yeah, much better off because it's not something that can be used against you as easily as a gun it can be. And it's not, you know, a gun is designed to be extremely lethal and easy to use to kill. And that makes it a hazard as well. It's a hazard that really has to be treated as such. So that's another sort of countercultural point that we're always making is that, yeah, you know, despite what the movies may want to portray or what the firearms industry wants you to believe, that having a gun is not your ticket to safety, and really to the contrary. So and one of the things I wanted to talk a little bit about was how the kids in the youth program learn a number of different skills about, like, as I mentioned before, de-escalation, where you say to your group, okay, you know, you can get into an argument with somebody, right, about something. And you can see when people start to get mad, you can see it in their faces, you can see that tension rising. And that's a point where you can change that dynamic. You can turn it away from getting hotter, right? You can turn that interaction and try to come up with a solution instead. You can acknowledge what the other person said. One of the skills is active listening, where you say, okay, I think what you're trying to say is this, am I right? And that's a way to have people engage one another instead of allowing that temperature to keep on rising. So those are important things to talk about with our kids and to try to model with our, you know, with our families. And it's hard, but it's definitely worth the trouble, and it's something that we also need to continue to talk about.
I know, depending on who's in your family, it can be very hard to de-escalate hot temperatures.
That's right. That's right.
You guys do gun buybacks and everything, right? Is that a different organization?
Communities do them. We have helped communities do them if they are very interested in them. However, we do tell organizations that want to do that the research shows that doing a gun buyback doesn't seem to have a measurable effect on the safety of the community. And there's a number of reasons for that. I think it raises awareness, which is good, but gun buybacks can be very expensive. You have to, you know, come up with $100 or a couple hundred dollars for each firearm. And I think that one of the reasons that that's not going to be as effective as other things, like keeping guns out of the hands of the wrong people in the first place, is that sometimes you're reaching the wrong people. And, you know, it kind of makes sense to me. Once in a while you do get something that looks like something that came off the street, something that may have been used in a crime or something like that. But oftentimes you will get older guns that people wanted to get rid of anyway and they didn't know how. So I do want to put in a plug for something I do know about in Minneapolis. If you do have a gun that you are trying to get rid of, and, you know, what do you do with that? You can't put it in the recycling, right? If you want to get rid of a gun, you can
lock it into the police department.
Sure, that's right. But you have to make sure that you're, you know, carrying it in a bag, or, you know, don't walk into the police department with, you know, carrying a gun in your hand. That's not a good idea. But bring it in a bag. They want it to be unloaded, but I know that unless you have handled guns and you are familiar with them, it's very difficult to tell whether the gun is loaded or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole other story, because guns are not regulated by the Consumer Product Safety Commission either. They're exempt from all safety regulations. So at any rate, you do your best to determine that it's unloaded and you can walk it into a police station. And that is tremendous, because that isn't always the case in every municipality. There are a lot of towns that would say, yeah, sorry, I don't know. I don't know what to do with it. So we're fortunate in Minneapolis that they do have that capability. And I would urge, you know, if you're a mom and you know that there's a gun somewhere in the house, or you've seen that somebody hiding something somewhere, please get it and take it out of that household, take it out of wherever you've seen it, and bring it down to the police. You as an individual can do to make your community safer.
Now, say I know my son is carrying a gun around, and I obviously don't want him to have it anymore. If I take
right.
it and walk it into the police station,
mm-hmm.
what happens? Are they going to question me on where I got it from? Are they going to want to know about my son? Are they going to test it and, you know, find out that, you know, what happens after that? If for some reason it was used in a crime or something, are they going to come back after my child?
My understanding is no. I would... And I want to actually, that's a good question to see what the current policy is, because if it is used, you know, if it was used in a crime, they would probably want to take it for, you know, use it for evidence purposes or something. But the other
mm-hmm.
thing is, if it's stolen, they might return it to whoever the original owner is. They can figure out who that
uh-huh.
is. But my understanding is that the objective of this is to allow people to get rid of guns and get them off the streets. But I will say that I need to determine what the current policy is, so that I can assure you that you've got the right what the
because I
the
think that would be
is.
one of the big things that, you know, parents, family members, or even, you know, the person themselves, if they didn't want their gun anymore, you know, if there was
yeah.
a crime committed on it, are they coming after me? Are they coming after my child? Are they going to question
mm-hmm. right?
Know what I mean? And
yeah.
I don't want
yep.
to turn into a snitch or whatever. I just want to get rid of the gun.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a very good
question. Well, we've got about
45
seconds left. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, I would say, and since you've asked that question, we'll get the answer and put it up on our website, which is www.protectmn.org. And I encourage you to find us on Facebook as well. We are having... on January 12th, a remembrance of life at Church of the Ascension at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, where you can bring a photograph of a loved one that you've lost, and that person will be honored and memorialized, and that is on our page also.
So
I encourage people to get involved, sign up, get on the newsletter list, so you can find out what's going on and educate yourself on how to take our communities back and get the guns off the streets.
Well, that's great. Thank
so, yeah.
you so much for being on the show with us today, Heather.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate being invited.
I've learned a lot.
Okay. All right.
You
well,
have
thanks
a great...
so much. Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was Blog Talk. Thank you for listening. Hope you guys learned as much as I did. And enjoy the rest of your week. Talk to you next time.
M-A-D-D-A-D-S. Men against destruction, because you know that we are blessed. Fathers of the ghetto ain't expressing nothing less. From the north to the south, to the east, to the west. Badass, how you feel? On the streets, we keep it real. Day and night, the jungle fight is serious. I'm so for real. Tell me what was I to do. All I seen was knocking blue. Soldiers showing love.